You're listening to Soldanela for Notes from a Native Daughter with guest Nancy Guevara.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I mean, it's such a honor that you asked, and I'm happy to talk and share, and just excited about this space that you created.
How do you start? Like, when discover that you're gonna be an artist?
So yeah, I think I came to art very young. I came to art because of necessity. I felt the need, this very strong need to express. I was living in it was a difficult household to live in. And then also growing up in Laredo, I think border cities in Texas like Laredo and the Rio Grande Valley, where I'm based now, can also feel very isolating. And also it's very intentionally isolated, and also there's a lack of resources. And so just that combination kind of felt like I just had this really strong need to express and find an avenue for everything that I was seeing and feeling. And so I came to art. I mostly started drawing and just using, what I found around my house. I also, my mom was trained, and she took a technical training in sewing. She was a costurera. And so sometimes I would watch her sew clothes for us, outfits. One year she sewed this angel outfit for Halloween. And yeah, I feel like that's how my mom saw me. Like, she's like, esta va a ser, because I have four sisters, there's five of us. But I feel like my mom was like, esta va a ser mi ángel. So I would watch my mom make art. There were also a lot of construction materials around my house because my father was involved in construction. And so I just slowly kind of grabbed stuff that I saw around the house and started making stuff. So it was mostly drawing and working with fabric, which I do now, working with textiles. And also just finding like wood scraps or any sort of scraps and like building something really small scale. And so I didn't come to art like with a formal class. I came to art because I wanted to talk, but not in a verbal way. And then I just wanted to express everything that I was feeling. And when I started high school, my sister, who she was already in the arts as well, she was in theater. And my sister, my older sister Anabel, she lives in New York. I was watching her her plays, and in high school she entered this magnet school. And in Laredo, this magnet school is connected to public school, so youth can go to the magnet school half of the day, and then their public school the other half of the day. And so this magnet school was dedicated to the arts and to dance, theater, media, and visual arts. And so this was a pretty, now that I remember, just that school and the environment of the school felt really radical in terms of just its focus on the arts and also the environment that they created in that school. But I took my first formal art class when I was a freshman. My sister took me to the painting studio and introduced me to the teacher, Mr. Vasquez. And ever since then, I started taking formal classes with him and learning about Chicano art. He was so big on Chicano art. and he invited me. He also did a series of mural projects in the city and invited his students to paint the murals. And so he also invited me to a couple of mural projects in Laredo. And so that's when I started understanding that I could do art, like focus on art as a living. That's also when I realized I just love, love, love public art and making art with community and making art as a collective. So just the feeling I got as a young person in high school doing these public art pieces at Maridel Tejas was just so like exciting and invigorating and like just very activating and just in my body. And so that's what I decided to pursue. That's when I decided, you know, I'm gonna study art. I'm gonna go to college and I'm gonna study art. And I think going to college was of course modeled by my older sisters. I have three older sisters and one younger sister. And so my three older sisters had already moved to San Antonio and to Austin to go to school there. And so they kind of led that path for the younger ones. And so, yeah, I then moved to Austin and decided to study art for a year and then chose to study design.
And continue from there, because your education background is really flushed, you know, and very beautiful. And it definitely, you've worked your way through all these halls. Continue with that.
Sure. So I was studying art, and then just because of, you know, my immigrant parents were like, well, are you going to make money from art? And then, you know, I was consulting some of my family members and sisters, and I just decided to apply to the design program at UT. And it just felt very like, at the time, I was like, that makes sense. I could study design, like without like fully knowing what it meant. But, you know, I just again went with my gut. Yeah, I spent 3 years in the design program and graduated from the University of Texas with a design degree. And I really approached design as in, I always, I remember in class, I would always want to do projects based on my hometown of Laredo and just like the border context. And so I was also like the context and just the everything having to do with my projects always was connected back to where I grew up. And so I just saw design as a way to think about like solutions, think about what are the issues happening and just thinking of better models. Like I always feel like I've had this strong sense of like, we can live better, like even in my like micro environment that was like my household, I always felt and thought, no, like we can live better and we can live well. And so that extends to my hometown, that extends to the Rio Grande Valley, and just seeing what's happening and knowing like deep down, like I know we can live better and we can live well, we can reach that. And using, really getting trained in art and design to make that possible, to like figure out ways so that my community can live well. And not only like we are in survival mode, but we need to be on, survival should just be like a given, like we need to be on thrive mode. And so I feel like my design background really helped. Like I feel like it's just like a wonderful combination for me, because I feel like I'm like in between everything. Like I feel like I'm an in-betweener in many ways. And I feel like am super in between in terms of like art and design. And
when you mean in betweener, you mean that you feel you are at intersections or in between, in that you don't find yourself in either or that you do integrate both?
Yeah. So in terms of just growing up in this political, politicized border, I don't like, there's this whole like identity thing of like not completely belonging on either, but like really being in the middle. And like, so I also identify with that in other ways. I don't just identify with one thing.
It's like Puerto Ricanos.
Yeah.
Different, but the same.
Yeah, for real. And like just being, holding that space is just like the lens that we have, and just like the way we look at things is very complex, I think.
Yeah. So it's very poetic what you're saying, that study of design fortified this sense of thinking differently in terms of, in an aspirational way, and I guess in a way that internally gave you strength to move forward, designing this new possibility of a different way, a different world, a different way of treating one another. I love it. And then, so you do those three years, and then you move to what next? Because you continued studying, going abroad, and you went abroad. Talk about your time in Mexico and all of that.
Yeah, so at the time I was graduating from the University of Texas, and I decided to apply to a Fulbright in Mexico City. And I think at the time I joked about this with one of my friends, but I was also like meeting a bunch of like gringos that were like, oh, have you been here in Mexico? Have you been here? Have you been here? And I was like, no, the only Mexico I know is Nuevo Laredo, Mexico. And I felt like a really strong sense of, I need to go learn about my home country. And like, so much of my cultural connection is through my mom, and through living in Laredo too. And I just wanted to learn more about it and feel it. And I think oftentimes when we live on the border, there's all these narratives, right? Very, very strong narratives that we live with. And these narratives are used to justify the wall, the criminalization of brown, black bodies, the surveillance, the high, like, policing. These narratives of, oh, there's nothing in Mexico. Oh, Mexico's a third world country. Oh, Mexico's dangerous. You don't want to go over there. It's better over here. Like, all those narratives. And when I was living in Austin, like away from my hometown, and it's very different. It's just a very stark difference. And so a lot of it, there was almost like a culture shock, right? All of a sudden, a lot of people were interested in where I was from, why I spoke the way I spoke. And so I think that was just a part of like my identity formation, that I just felt really strong about going to Mexico and seeing. And so I applied to this Fulbright and I received it. And the whole project was to practice what was then coined social design in Mexico City. And I worked with an industrial designer there who started like just a small group of volunteers who would design based on social issues happening in Mexico City. And so one of the major projects that came out of that year was working with a group of psychologists in one of the hospitals in Mexico City dedicated to treating child cancer patients. And so we created this learning resource, this visual story-based interactive emotional support resource for children who were staying in the hospital. I think that was a very important project and experience for me because it started teaching me kind of the process or how I could work with other people in other disciplines to create something, to create things that could help. I mean, that could just help. And I really appreciated that process because it was already a need that the psychologist had identified. And so it was like it wasn't a project that I took over there or that I was like, oh, we need this. You know, it was like meeting people and, you know, the group of medical staff being like, this is what we need. And, you know, let's work together to create this. And it was great in that way. Also, I like fell in love with Mexico. I was like, oh my gosh, this place is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it almost like, I like cried a couple times or like many times because I was just like, how come this was like, almost like hidden from me? I felt like it was like hidden or something. I think my mom and I keep like having conversations and I think it's just hard for her, I think, because she did have a hard time in Mexico and she kind of sees the U.S. as like this like safe haven, right? And so it's, I don't know, that's a bit more complicated. But I think hidden in terms of that, the really strong narratives that we hear on the border and like that creating sort of a disinterest in Mexico. And I just felt like, oh my gosh, this place has like so much and like so many things still like I have yet to learn because there's just so many different regions and like cultures and like foods and like histories. And so that was just, that year in Mexico was like, for me, it was an affirmation of like, this place is amazing and also so many false narratives from the U.S., so many.
You wanna name a few?
Yeah, when people say this is the best country in the world, I feel like that's just not acknowledging just the cultural richness and just like the talent, ingenuity, knowledge that comes from everywhere else in the world. I mean, I've met some of the most amazing and brilliant artists, people, scholars, just like in Mexico, that I think that's one of the biggest false narratives of like what happens when we say this is the best country in the world. Like, that's kind of discounting all the contributions and all the work that's happening everywhere else.
Yeah. Well, and also that nothing, it's a false narrative also in that it presumes that there's, that all things work in the society.
Yes.
And that's just simply not true. We are equal to every country out there with their problems and ours.
Yes.
Are nothing to feel proud about. So right. Yeah, there's a lot of false narratives for sure. So your volunteer work and the women you look over help other people that are helping. Talk about that.
I would say I'm mostly volunteer and I just want to center the people that are like on the ground and really doing a lot of work with the migrant camps. So the first time I had visited the migrant camps, So what happened is from the federal level, the policies were changing, and we were noticing that the Border Patrol or the customs enforcement people that were in the ports of entry were now standing in the middle of the bridge. And that's something that I personally have never seen in my, even in Laredo. And so those folks, the customs enforcement folks, were standing in the middle and were not allowing migrants who were seeking asylum to go past the Mexico-US line, which is technically in the middle of the bridge. That's why. And so we started seeing small migrant camps of migrants seeking asylum and waiting for their cases, right? And when I first visited, a colleague of mine, Cindy Johnson, who is actually there every day and doing work on the ground in Matamoros, she had asked if I knew someone that made tamales. And this was for like a Christmas break. And so we essentially took tamales, right? And that was the first time I had seen the small camp. And I think there were about 20 people. And in like a year, it grew from like 10 to like thousands of people, I think. I don't know the exact number. But now it looks like a small like tent city. And so my role in that has been very small. It's just been transporting supplies, gathering supplies, and trying to get some supplies to the folks that are essentially, I mean, they're living outside. The migrants are living outside. It's very hard. And like, sometimes on this side, in Brownsville, folks are like, oh, we haven't had a lot of rain lately, and it's good that we're going to have rain. And I always think of the migrant camps, because when it rains over there, it's just really hard. It just makes it harder. And they're there because of a program called the Stay in Mexico, or I forget what the name was called. But essentially they're camping out and they're waiting to get their cases seen. They've been there for a while, and from what I hear from my compañera Cindy is that, I mean, folks are really frustrated. Folks are really frustrated and they're tired of being there, and it's just hard. It's really hard. I don't know. I think I'm also having trouble expressing, because it's just, I think with all the layers happening right now, that's just hard. And a lot of the volunteers that used to be able to go and help can't anymore because of the pandemic. And so there's still some groups there. I think the Team Brownsville is there. This other group called Migrarte is there. And because I honestly just do this work, like, I don't, like, it's like sometimes, and I just try to do what I can. And
that's all we can do. But you do a lot if you help them get supplies, you know?
yeah, it's just, I think when there's just so much happening, it never feels like, yeah, I think we're just, there's folks here trying to help and trying to support. And I think that's just like, basically, like, we're just being good neighbors, you know?
Yeah.
Trying to be good neighbors, because it's not, it's not right what's happening, and people shouldn't be living like that.
Absolutely not. And what are you like engaged in projects right now in your community? I still want to share.
Yeah. So I just finished a small fundraiser with Monica Sosa and Sandra Treviño. Sandra is a local artist and activist, and Monica works for NELAC and is also an arts and arts administrator. And we launched this fundraiser on GoFundMe, and this fundraiser was focused on and dedicated to raising money for street vendors here in Bronzeville. And so our goal was to raise $5,000. We ended up raising $5,500. And we were able to provide $500 to 11 families who do street vending in Bronzeville. And so this was a project that we just wrapped up a couple of weeks ago. I will continue to work around street vendors and street vending. My mom, my grandma, and my great-grandma were street vendors in Mexico. And so I really have a strong connection to that legacy. And also, I really believe that's our way forward in terms of providing economic justice here in Brownsville, Texas. And yeah, so those are some of the projects I'm working on now. I'm also teaching at the university. I'm teaching an arts appreciation class, which I'm excited about. I'm also doing some freelance work. I'm an independent graphic designer and artist. And so I work through commissions. And so I'm doing some of that stuff. And in general, I also feel like I dedicate my art practice also to shifting those narratives, those really strong narratives that we have here in the Rio Grande Valley on the border that justify all this inhumane policies. And so I will continue doing that work. And also, I do community artwork and art with community. And my framework around that is being a neighbor and just being a community member and just working with folks and seeing, like, you know, necesito, you know, people will be like, ah, Nancy, necesito esto. Okay, like, I'm there. Do you need me to clean? Do you need me to cook? Do you need me to build something? Do you need me to paint? A ver, ¿qué necesitamos? You know, because that's not, that I really, yeah, my framework around being an artist here is that, just being a good vecina and a good community member. And that's how I treat my work.
Mm-hmm. I know. Thank you. Thank you for all you do. I think what you're doing is beautiful.
Gracias, Orm. I'm all like...
Great.
Yeah.
So glad that we connected. And all right. So thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Sorm. It was great talking to you. Y gracias. I mean, gracias for inviting me into the space and hearing my voice, you know. I'm like, ay, me están preguntando cosas.
Claro, claro. ¿Cómo no? ¿Cómo no? You have a kind heart.
Híjole, es que hay muchas cosas pasando. Like, hay muchas cosas. Just,
so we carry on.
Sí, right. Compañera. Mm-hmm.
Dale.